Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. May 2nd, 2014. Spring finally seems to have sprung, at least here in New York, after almost a biblical flood. Goodness. Good to join you at the end of the week, as it always is. Those of you familiar with my program know that I'm a retired senior special agent of what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service, an agency who, at least on paper, is supposedly being done now by ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and we all know that ICE is one of a number of agencies under DHS, an agency that, out of my sensibilities and concerns for truth and honesty, have come to refer to as the Department of Homeland Surrender. There's so much going on. It's an exciting show that we have lined up. I'm expecting Major General Paul Vallely, the retired Major General of the United States Army, to be joining me very shortly. I've had the privilege of meeting the general. In fact, I see his number up on my screen right now. Happy Friday, General. Thank you so much for joining me.
Happy Friday, Michael. Lots of news today.
Boy, absolutely. I was just starting my intro, if you'll bear with me, for about 45 seconds,
sure.
And we're going to get right to you. I just want to give out two websites, very important websites, michaelcutler.net, and everyone who's familiar with the show knows that I'm a senior fellow with a terrific organization in California, CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. Their website is capsweb.org. I'll be talking a little bit more about them afterwards. But suffice it to say that they have been focused on the impact that our open borders and failures to enforce the immigration laws have been having, not just on California, but on the whole country, whether it's the environment, whether it's unemployment, lack of participation of American workers in the labor force. We're getting hammered. California has been ground zero for illegal immigration, but certainly the impact has been felt in every one of our 50 states from coast to coast, border to border. Go to their website, capsweb.org. But without further ado, I want to go to General Paul Vallely. You've had an exciting day today, haven't you, General?
Well, very exciting with the news this morning. As you know, Michael, I co-founded with others the Citizens Commission Council on Benghazi.
Yes,
and we've
indeed.
Been working for a year to get all the facts out and to get a select committee appointed by the Speaker of the House to be able to subpoena all the key people that were involved in the Benghazi issue and situation. And an article I wrote about 3 weeks ago advising that Boehner set that up immediately and announced that Trey Gowdy of South Carolina would be the chair, and it looks like that's what's going to happen.
That's awesome. You know, I had the privilege of speaking with Trey Gowdy a couple of times. I'm very impressed by his approach, and, you know, I was a federal agent for 30 years, worked closely with U.S. attorneys, and he, in turn, worked very closely with special agents, and I think he's a no-nonsense, get-to-the-bottom-of-the-story kind of a guy, so I can't imagine a more capable leader in the Congress. I think the guy is a pit bull, much as yourself, by the way. You're demonstrating a principle I've always believed in, once a leader, always a leader. On behalf of all Americans, this isn't just about four men who were killed. The tragic, god-awful as it was a U.S. ambassador. It was three of our officials that we, in my view, and again, the facts aren't in, and as an agent, I was always the fact finder, but it seems as though they were left out or hung out to dry. But I want to start with a quote, and I know how much it rankles you, and it pisses me off, probably as much as it pisses you off, and I want to use that as the springboard. You probably guessed I'm going to talk about Hillary waving her arms in the air maniacally, saying, well, they're dead at this point. What difference does it make? Why don't we start with that? What difference does it make, Paul?
Well, it makes a lot of difference because we put Americans out in a hazardous area, a high-risk area. And many of our embassies in the Middle East and other places are like that, just like American Army or Armed Forces facilities and even our corporate headquarters that have been attacked overseas. So when you're in a high-risk situation like that, you got to make sure that you have security arrangements established and you have to have an idea of good intelligence that's available to you in case there are threats, assaults against that, just like we saw in Tehran in 1979.
Yep.
And we didn't react to that either. We attempted to, but it was a failed mission. But men at risk, women at risk around the world, they want to know America's ready to come and rescue them in case anything happens. And we had four people killed, and we didn't even attempt, a green light for us to even attempt to rescue them.
Unbelievable. Now, there's another point, and I'm going to go back to how different what difference does it make? I got to tell you, it sticks in my craw because as an agent, and I know that you especially as an officer, a general officer, accountability is at the top of what we did in our professional careers. There was no such thing as coming back after somebody got hurt or things went badly and saying to your boss, what difference does it make? You know, we were held to a standard. And it to me, is the difference between an accident, manslaughter or murder in terms of even a car accident or an airplane crash. Here you have the Secretary of State, the honcho, the person where the buck stops here, as Harry Truman would have said, where embassy security is concerned, basically saying, who cares? And the yeah. one point I'm going to make, and I want you to do most of the talking, because I want to learn from you, and I know my listeners want to learn from you, but this notion of no responsibility and no accountability seems to have become fashionable in our government these days. On 9/11, 3,000 people were killed. I met some of their family members. I worked with them over the years trying to get justice, trying to get national security to take immigration into account, which the 9/11 Commission said it was supposed to. And what strikes me is that the only people who lost their jobs on 9/11 were the victims. So now we've got the Secretary of State, I guess, surprised that anybody would make her accountable. Do you get that same sense that she was astonished that somebody wanted her to explain what she did or did not do? Because that really was what came through to me. Did you see that through the same prism that I saw it?
Oh, absolutely. And you see it in the other hearings that are going on, the IRS, Fast and Furious. You see it in Eric Holder. You see it even in some of the military officers that have appeared, like General Dempsey, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, that needs to be brought in under a subpoena as well. But, no, it's prevalent. They want all the money, the pay, the benefits, the bonuses and that, but nobody wants to be held accountable. And, Michael, they don't want to be challenged.
Yeah. There's a level of arrogance that I have to tell you I've never seen before. You
never.
Almost think you're looking at imperial characters rather than civil servants of the United States government.
That work for us, and they think they work for themselves and their own hierarchy. Yep. It's a divided government.
And I know that you certainly were accountable. I'm certain that you held the troops under your command accountable.
Absolutely.
At what point? So how in the world do we reconcile this out-of-control, lawless government? I mean, I see lawlessness when we have a president who claims prosecutorial discretion to ignore the laws that are supposed to protect us. You know, as a general, I know that you're a great strategist. Tell me if I'm wrong. Is it not true that the military's primary mission is to keep America's enemies as far from her shores as possible? We can't do that with an open border. We can't do that with unknown millions of foreign nationals whose identities or even countries of citizenship can't be determined. How in the world do you defend the country under those circumstances, and yet the president says those laws are insignificant? You have sanctuary cities basically harboring illegal aliens who might be terrorists or fugitives, enemy combatants, and they get away with it. Could you imagine if those same sanctuary cities harbored people who didn't want to pay income tax to the IRS, especially if they were political conservatives?
Well, I'm just reviewing a new movie documentary by Joel Gilbert, which will be out in a few months, and I'm going to get a copy for you. But he goes inside Denver, goes inside of Detroit, and he actually talks to the illegal immigrants who are there. And, of course, he asked all of them, what do you think of Obama? And for the most part, they like Obama. And he says, well, why? He says, well, we get food stamps, we get medical, we get cell phones. And he said, this is, a number of them said this, but that's what's happening. And 80% of the Hispanics that we found out coming into the country, God bless them, but they're voting for socialist type of candidates, and many of them voting illegally.
Yeah, and you know, that's funny, because when I was on with Neil Cavuto, we talked about the voting issue. And I said, you know, I don't think that the Americans who voted for Obama necessarily voted for him because of his immigration policy. They voted for him because they want big government. They might have voted for him in spite of their his immigration policies, because they're just going to have to slice the pie that much thinner when you keep adding millions of more people who want to be part of that pie. So how in the world are the Republicans showing leadership? And I'm a Democrat, you know. This isn't a partisan issue. I'm just looking at it from a perspective of national security and the economy. So we're at risk in our embassies overseas. Basically, the cavalry wasn't even sent out to try to help them. Cities around the country are being bombarded by drug dealers. Jobs are being created, but more foreign nationals are taking the jobs than Americans. In fact, we're bringing in more foreign workers than the number of jobs we're creating. In this kind of chaos, how do you defend the country? And the other point, the last point I'll make, and I want to turn it back to you, people keep saying, well, the border is secure, it's not secure, it's all these nonsense statistics. You know, the real measure of border security is the availability of narcotics. And we have a heroin epidemic that spans the country right now, simply because that border is nothing more than a speed bump. I'm sure you're familiar with the nexus between terrorism and the drug trade, especially heroin. And you just got back from Egypt, so I'd love to know what you found in Egypt, what your thoughts are about the heroin trade in the United States, and what the impact it has on terrorist organizations in terms of funding these bums.
Well, I'll take the first one. We know that absolutely it's tied to the cartels. We know the open borders now coming up all the way from Venezuela. It's being infiltrated and has been infiltrated by Iran. And we know we have radical elements crossing our borders. And they come all the way up through Central America through our leaky borders. And then they go to the cities, the internal cities in the United States. And, of course, with that, they multiply the effect of the drug trade in Chicago, in Detroit, in Philadelphia, Miami, Dallas, Phoenix. That weakens the country tremendously because of the assets that it takes to support all the illegal immigrants. As well as the number of unemployed we have in our own country. The blacks should be up in arms about this because they're taking jobs away from them. You know, you look at the south of the border, and as one gentleman said in the film I just reviewed, he said, we don't get paid enough where we are. We want to come to America so we can get paid more. And then he said, well, you're an American citizen. He said, no, but my children are.
Right. And, you know, I was just interviewed by a young lady who goes to a university down in Texas. She's of, I guess, Mexican ancestry. We were talking about something Steve King and Senator Vitter is trying to do, to create a law that would make a distinction between children born to Americans or illegal aliens, so that illegal aliens would not have American kids. But that would require registering all children, costing hundreds of dollars for Americans. And I said to the young lady, I said, you know, I understand why Steve King is doing this, and I know he's desperate, but let's go back to Occam's razor. The simplest solution is the best solution, generally. If we secured the borders, if we prevented the entrance of massive numbers of illegal aliens, we wouldn't be having this conversation about the 14th Amendment and about creating new legislation to prevent illegal aliens from having American children in the United States. And it's amazing that we keep trying to develop a Rube Goldberg device to overcome the nonfeasance, misfeasance, and malfeasance by this administration. It's remarkable, isn't it?
Well, it is. And also, you know, it goes back to the previous administrations as well, as you know.
Oh, absolutely.
But we have so many security problems in the United States. You know, we had a meeting probably about 6 months ago in Miami, when we were talking about creating these high-tech processing management development centers in Phoenix and Miami so people could register to come into the country, work for their 6 months or 12 months, and go back home. We have all the capability to database all this stuff and to process people in and out. And those that want to apply for citizenship could be part of that process. But we cannot provide amnesty for all of these people. I mean, it'll just absolutely continue to crush America, who is already under tremendous financial pressure.
Well, you're right, and it's, but here's the problem. You could register everybody under the sun, and, you know, and I always tell people, you've got to ask questions. Nobody challenges any of these folks. Maybe because I'm Jewish, I have the DNA to start out with a question. Now, the joke is that Jews answer questions with another question. But the question that nobody asks is, well, we're going to get these people out of the shadows. Well, you'll only get the people out of the shadows who want to come forward, and even then there's the danger that their fingerprints might not be on file, but they might be truly bad people from other parts of the world. But people who know that we have records aren't going to come forward.
Absolutely. I mean, anybody with common sense can understand that, Michael. They're not going to come forward. But there are ways that we can look and have forward strategies on this if we get the right people in government, and we don't. Our leadership in Congress, leadership within the executive branch is the worst probably that America has ever seen.
No, I agree. It's not even close. I mean, it's not even a conversation. Look, Reagan gave us the first amnesty, never hired any agents to deal with the onslaught of extra work it created. He basically tripled our workload. And we couldn't deal with what we had before they passed the amnesty of 86. They still didn't hire a single new agent. They had to realize this was a catastrophe. But it started with Jimmy Carter with the language, you know, you can't use the word alien, and all an alien is a person who's not a citizen or national. That's the definition in the law books. There's no insult, just clarity. And then you had Clinton. And you know, what upsets me, and I guess we're kindred spirits in terms of being frustrated because we've been trying to do the right thing for many years. I did my first congressional hearing on May 20th, 1997, 4.5 years before 9/11. And it was because of the first two terrorist attacks in 93 that they held that hearing that I was invited to testify before by Lamar Smith from Texas. And it was about visa fraud and benefit fraud. And if the Clinton administration had addressed those issues effectively, 9/11 would have been an impossibility. So the fact that the Clinton administration utterly ignored the vulnerabilities that enabled the terrorists, both Cansey, who shot up the CIA in 93, January, and then a month later, first attack at the Trade Center, over 1,000 people injured, 6 people dead, $500 million in damages inflicted, one tower darn near came over sideways, and if that had happened, you probably would have had hundreds of thousands of fatalities. Some of my buddies worked on that bomb blast. And the engineers came to the conclusion that if they had filled that Ryder truck to the top with explosives, or if they had parked it on the opposite wall where they were going to, apparently there was a car parked there, luckily, so it blocked the truck so they couldn't park where they had planned to park it, it seems, the tower would have toppled. This was a serious, serious attack. This wasn't a firebomb. This wasn't graffiti. There were dead bodies and lots of injured people, and the Clinton administration's response was a big, fat goose egg. And that's what left the door open, literally and figuratively, to 9/11.
No doubt about it. Well, reconnecting over to Egypt, which I just returned from week before last. That's
what I wanted to ask you about next.
Here's a country that's dealing in the realities. Our country is dealing in utopia. The Obama utopia, and people are falling prey to it. But it's the whole plan, when we look at immigration, the poor, is to get really cheap to follow, and that's what social progressives do. And that's what they've done in China. That's what they've done in Russia. We're doing in some countries in Central and South America. But Egypt is dealing in the realities of the situation, what they had to do and what they're doing to rebuild Egypt into the future. And I'm so inspired by the Egyptian leadership and what they're doing over there.
Really?
I went with Women Activist Group. I went with a group of 20-year-olds, a group of 30-year-olds. They're all very excited about the future. And you know what they say? Because we're Egyptians first. So
right.
That's why Stand Up America, my organization, is launching next month the Americans First Project.
I love it.
And we want all candidates for office to be able to come out and say to the American people, I'm an American first, before I'm a Republican and before I'm a Democrat. And
awesome.
As an American, this is what I stand for. So we're going to launch that next month, and that's what I'm asking all candidates, even out here in Montana. Are you an American first? If so, what do you stand for?
That's terrific, you know, and that's what it should really be about. And, you know, if I had the privilege of watching you deliver your speech at the Tea Party convention. I know you were there when I spoke, and that was the point that I made. I might be registered as a Democrat, but first and foremost, I'm an American, and you saw the crowd's reaction. I think there's
Absolutely.
A hankering among Americans for just that sense of commitment to America. Political party affiliation, as far as I'm concerned, is trivial. We have to look out for our own citizens first, just the way a family looks out for its own children first. Isn't that sensible?
No, it's very true, and we got to get to that. Our other focus on the Americans Project, Michael, is to focus on what I call the 30-year-olds.
Okay.
This is the 25 to 40-year-olds. We've got to focus all of our energy into those age groups because they're the ones now with the young families, the education, the skills. They're running companies. They're running their own businesses. And a lot of them don't have the historical background that you and I do. So
right.
we can be mentors to this group. Now, what's similar to this concept is what the Egyptians have done. They have focused on their youth over there, and it's worked out for them. And when you look at the Arab Spring throughout many of these countries, it's the youth that's moving forward to say, we want the future of Egypt, the future of America, the future of Syria, whatever. And that just means so much. So that's a lot of rebuilding that we have to do in America because many of our citizens and even the young people, they have no historical background as far as studies because they don't study a lot of history in the schools anymore.
You know,
and
they
don't even know what the Constitution's about.
No, and when I was speaking with these young ladies who were recommended to me by a professor, and I didn't even know the professor, but the issue was immigration, and he said, well, if you could reach this guy Cutler, he's one of the best guys in the United States on that issue. I'm very honored that people feel that way. But I said, you know, you need to read 1984. You know, I know my kids weren't asked to read 1984 in school, so I had them read it. I mean, these are essential books for people to understand about propaganda, understand democracy, understand, put things in context. And unfortunately, yeah. so many people today are unable to put what they're witnessing and experiencing into any kind of a greater context. And I think context is extremely important to get people to understand what's really going on.
Well, that's true. And to also understand how evil progressive socialism is and communism.
Yep.
And the path of Saul Alinsky that Obama and many of his followers have taken, and all those societies at some point in time go into the dumpster. And Obama making America change forever is changing it in a very negative way, culturally, economically, financially, militarily, as he gets the military. So that's why our leaders, I'm calling for these leaders to resign immediately, Biden, Obama, McConnell, even Boehner, Pelosi. These people need to resign and get out of government. We need the newer, younger people to get in there that can bring new ideas and energy.
I mean, of course, you know the likelihood of getting them to simply step down is somewhere between slim and none, and slim just left the building from what I've been told.
Well, it is, but that's why American people have to stand up. They had 33
yep.
million people in Egypt do it.
So you believe the Arab Spring is working, at least in Egypt?
Oh, my God. Absolutely. Well, that part of it, but then they've had two revolutions, you know, bringing Mubarak down and
yep.
then ridding the country of Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood. It's the youth. It's people standing up. And if we don't stand up, then we deserve what we get. And we can demand resignations. We demanded the resignation of Nixon. It worked.
Yeah. Well, you know, so, I mean, sir, you know, when I was sitting across the table from a chairman of a House congressional committee, and I'm being kind and not telling you who he is, I'm giving him one more opportunity where hopefully, you know, we can have another meeting and so forth. But I raised two questions when we discussed the immigration issue. I said, first of all, why isn't the 9/11 Commission the starting point for any conversation about immigration? Because the 9/11 Commission, and you know I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission, and it made it clear that it was the failures of the immigration system, the visa process, and so forth that enabled terrorists to enter the United States and embed themselves, hide in plain sight. I said, so why in the world is anybody talking about anything without pulling out the 9/11 Commission report and also the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel? And this is kind of interesting, General. The 9/11 Commission had a staff, obviously, of lawyers and investigators, agents. Some of them were my former colleagues. And they were there to work with the commissioners. And they looked at what the commission did, and they were very clear about the dangers posed by immigration failures and so forth. It wasn't ignored. But their staff said it didn't go far enough, so they wrote their own report specifically focusing on immigration. That's how significant immigration is. And it was almost as big a volume as the entire 9/11 Commission report was. So I said to this chairman, why isn't that the starting point? Why isn't the Real ID Act that was passed in response to the 9/11 Commission, why isn't that being taken into account when you talk about giving people identity documents without even an interview? This is a catastrophe. I couldn't get an answer, although I asked that question at least three or four times. He had pointed to the fact that there had been hearings in Washington about how the political asylum system doesn't work, it's dysfunctional. I said, great. So if they held hearings that political asylum, which deals with thousands, is failing, the Tsarnaev brothers who carried out that vicious attack in Boston, deadly attack, gamed the political asylum process. They just did a hearing where they found members of the Mexican cartels are getting political asylum. You know, I'm a big fan of asylum. My grandma died in the Holocaust, but not when we're letting in criminals and terrorists. So if you can't instill integrity when you're dealing with thousands, how do you create integrity when you're dealing with millions? Couldn't get an answer. The other question I asked, why are we being told, whether it's Romney or Obama, that we need to educate foreign students and staple green cards on their diplomas? Why aren't we providing educational opportunities for American kids? I said, you know what? In the long run, it would be cheaper to pay the complete education of a child living in poverty to lift him or her out of that neighborhood, out of the poverty, out of the squalor, and give them real opportunities. Why aren't we focusing on those Americans? Couldn't get an answer to that one. So I think that last question very much coincides with what your goals and objectives are. I'd like your thoughts.
Well, exactly, and that's why it's going to take a continued dialogue along those lines, that because words, Michael, mean a lot.
Yes.
And when you look at society in the words, I've been working on another project, part of the Americans. I want to do away with black, white, Hispanic American, people of color. I want us to start dealing people on people.
Yep.
And let's get rid of this dialogue of trying to classify all these different people. You know, even we don't classify the immigration sufficiently and the fact to articulate, you know, how it should be done and can be done properly. That's not been articulated by anybody in government. But it goes back to not establishing class systems. And that's what happens, even though the socialist communists say that we're one and all, basically, they're not. They have a very well-to-do elite, as we've seen, and then you have the other people that are sheep within those society with no freedoms, no rights that we have in in the Republic of the United States. So it all goes back to how we, Michael, continue the dialogue, and when someone talks about, well, our first black president, no, Obama's the president. You don't have to put black in there.
Correct.
You don't
correct.
Have to
there shouldn't be an adjective.
Black and white.
Would you say the guy with blue eyes, the blue-eyed president, the brown-eyed president? I mean, that's really how we should
it's
be regarding
crazy.
It, and I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more. You know, by the way, I don't know if you saw the article in the Washington Times saying that they've done some universities, I think Princeton and another university, has come to the terrible conclusion that we no longer live in a republic but an oligarchy where the wealthy get what they want and the rest of us, lots of luck. And I really think we're headed in that direction, an oligarchy not unlike Mexico. I think that the super wealthy are looking to Mexico as the role model instead of the other way around. I'd like your thoughts on that.
Well, we have a lot of wealthy people. We have a pretty well-to-do upper middle class. The middle class is probably hurting as much as anybody today because they've got the education, but they can't get jobs. They're losing their businesses. They're overtaxed.
Yep. But when you look at the Gateses and the Zuckerbergs and the Bloombergs, the billionaires who are really calling the shots, I'm just concerned that it keeps getting more and more in that direction at this point.
It appears that way. No, it really does appear that way. And many of them seem to be supporting more and more of the socialist progressives for some reason. I think it's because they're making so damn much money off the government right now, they don't want to challenge it. That's my gut feel.
That's entirely possible. And, I mean, look, they're getting what they want in the Supreme Court, and I know there's some First Amendment folks that will disagree with me. But my concern is that we keep on making it easier and easier for more and more money to be pumped into the political campaigns. And that disturbs me. Because that's not the way it's supposed to work. By the way, just as a note, I know some people are calling in. You're going to have to hold your calls, folks. If you're listening, that's great, but I don't want to do anything to interrupt the flow of the conversation with General Vallelie this evening, so bear with us. By the way, I want you to know that I certainly stand with you, and I will provide you whatever assistance I can with my background on the immigration issue, which I think is a significant issue in all of this. Because I think what you're doing is exactly what America needs to have done at this point in this very troubled era.
Well, no doubt about it. And, I'm 74 years old, but I get up every morning, and my objective is to do what I can do each day to make sure that this country is not totally in the tank.
You're a role model for this whole country, by the way, Paul.
Well, thank you, Mike. I appreciate that, but... I'm just so dedicated to making sure America doesn't go in the tank and drown. And we're so vulnerable today. It's just incredible if most of the American people would realize that. And that when you go overseas, I'm absolutely embarrassed because people hate our government. They like the American people, like the Egyptians told me. Americans come over here and spend $7 every $1 that the Russians would spend. And so they want American tourism back, but they cannot trust and do not like our government. And that's almost anywhere you go outside of the United States. And that's a terrible predicament to be in for our country.
Well, I just heard the magic word. I feel like Groucho Marx and the duck just dropped down. If you remember his old show, You Bet Your Life. Russia, what do you make of the Ukraine?
Well, Putin's getting his way. He was able to take in Crimea. He's playing hardball. I think basically Ukraine will probably fall and come back under Russian control. I don't think weak need sanctions will work. I don't think the Europeans are in bed because there's a lot of economic ties to Russia right now. So I think from that standpoint, Putin plays hardball, and we have a president that plays wiffle ball. So there's no contest there.
You think that all of Ukraine is going to go?
I think so.
How about Poland and the other countries? Are they at risk?
No, I don't think so. I don't think he'll go that far. He just wants to ensure some of those border countries like that, even though Poland is as well. But that's too much of an economic bad situation that Putin's smart enough won't get into. That's why they had to dissolve the Federation before, because it just became economically undoable to sustain that. But Putin's a very smart man. He plays hardball, but he'll do what he has to do, and there's nobody's going to stop him.
I think they smell blood in the water or weakness. I really think they smell weakness there.
No doubt about it.
I think that's the problem. You're seeing the same thing with China, expanding its airspace. They're building their navy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's remarkable. And now, of course, you heard that latest brilliant statement from their deputy prime minister that America should use a trampoline to go into space. it infuriated me, and I know a lot of other people who had worked for NASA. greatly concerned that they grounded the shuttle fleet. I think it would have made more sense maybe to ground two of the space shuttles and say, look, we're still going to retain the capability to get up into space if we need it while we work on you know, the follow-on project. Instead, he immediately grounded us, turned our space fleet into museum relics. It almost felt willful, didn't it?
Michael, across the board, wherever you look, Obama pledged a major transformation of America.
And that's the only promise he kept.
He's working his plan. He works it each and every day. He dissolves himself of any type of criticism. He just continues down his own path. And we as Americans have to stop him from doing that. The question is, how do we do it?
Yeah, I know. I really agree with you. I just find this to be a very disturbing set of circumstances. And I worry about what it means for our allies, countries like Israel, who certainly are staunch supporters of the United States.
We just throw them under the bus every day. That's what we do.
You know, I had the privilege of working with the Israeli National Police for 26 years. There was never a time that we went to them and asked for something that they didn't only give it, but with a smile and twice as fast as I would have expected cooperation from one of our own other law enforcement agencies, to the point that they would fly diplomatic pouches to New York with dossiers on major players that we identified that were Israeli nationals that we were investigating. They actually flew their police officers here to sit on wiretaps because they were familiar not just with Hebrew, but with the jargon used by the Hebrew gangsters, you know, the Israeli gangsters and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't get better cooperation. And now look what we're doing. We're not just turning our back on them. We're kicking them in a very sensitive place.
Michael, look at the American-Israeli PAC, APAC,
yep.
All right?
Yep.
And Joel, I won't mention his last name. I went on a trip with them. But yet you look at almost the figures I got, 70-75% of the APAC members voted for Obama. And we still go back to see the majority of the Jewish population supporting Obama rather than being Americans first, rather than being Democrats first. And so
it's amazing.
It's amazing. Like a lot of the Catholics. The majority of the Catholics voted for Obama. I mean,
I mean, it's crazy.
They've got to turn around, because if they're a voting machine and you've got 80% of the illegals coming in that are voting, that they're progressive socialists because they get handouts, they get benefits, and they like that, then we're doomed in this country to ever turn it back to a solid republic.
As you travel around the country, and I know you do speaking engagements as I do, how do you find the support growing for what you're trying to accomplish?
Oh, absolutely. It's growing among a number of organizations throughout the country. We have many of them that I could list for you. We've got a continued resurging Tea Party throughout the country. I'll be kicking off a Tea Party event in Michigan in week after next.
Right.
But I can tell you with the veterans organizations and being fed up by the way the veterans are being treated, the latest thing from the Phoenix VA hospital.
Was that god awful? 40 veterans died waiting for what? I mean, how in the world do these people live with their consciences?
They're only worried about their own pay and their bonus, evidently, and that's why there's no accountability and nobody going to prison, nobody being, you know, really penalized for their inefficiencies and their lack of. And that goes back to being an officer. We judge officers. We're judged by performance. And if we're judging these people by performance and they don't perform and we still give them bonuses, my God, we've got everything back asswards.
Yeah, don't we, though?
It's incredible. Yeah.
I mean, boy, this isn't your father's army anymore, is it?
No, it isn't. Well, if you want to take some calls, I've got to move to another event here fairly shortly, Michael.
I have to tell you how honored I am that you spent 40 minutes with me here today, because, you know, you are the guy leading the charge.
I'm one of the leaders, I would think, but I'm just one.
Well, a hell of a one, I got to tell you. You're a hell of a one. And I'm very honored to consider you a friend, I have to tell you, Paul. So
same with me, Michael.
I want you to know how much I appreciate everything that you're doing. You let me know where you need me to be so I can join you out there, because we really have to shake Americans by their ears or something, by the scruff of their neck and wake them up. And you're the best alarm clock I've ever encountered, I have to tell you.
Well, thank you very much.
Travel safely. I hope you continue to mend well from your recent surgery. And when you get out to Michigan, please send my regards to those leaders out there. Alan West is a real great guy, and Ben Carson and the others. But I'll speak with you soon.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, have a great weekend. That was General Vallely. Great conversation, great insight. No shock. I'm certainly thrilled that he was able to call in. I'm gonna take a couple of calls here. Hi, you're on with Mike Cutler. Who's this?
Hi, Michael. It's Aileen Melton.
Who's this?
Aileen Melton from the
Oh, Party. Aileen, how are you, young lady? Great to hear your voice.
I'm doing great. Just listening in tonight. And, of course, I met both you and the general at the South Carolina Tea Party Convention.
Yep.
And I understand you're going to talk to our group on Monday evening.
I'm going to be doing a Skype with your group on Monday evening, and I hope to travel down to Florida before too very long to meet you all in person. I certainly am looking forward to the Skype and to that, and I hope you've been enjoying the program. He's an amazing guy, General Vallely, is he not? Amazing
yes,
American.
Yes, he is, and I've enjoyed listening to both of you and understanding more and more the importance of what's happening in our country and the immigration issue and so many other issues.
Well, you know, I've written commentaries for CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization, and if you go to capsweb.org, and I hope the folks out there will, one of the articles I wrote was Immigration and the Mushroom Treatment. You know, you grow mushrooms by keeping them in the dark and feeding them a lot of fertilizer. And if you watch the evening news, I don't care what network, immigration, you know, when they talk about comprehensive reform, the debate is bad and worse. Those are the two sides on the debate. Nobody ever stands up and says, wait a minute, how can we possibly keep on admitting more foreign workers when we can't create enough jobs to keep up? Why would we bring in more foreign workers because we're driving down wages and we're increasing the money being wired out of the country, the remittances? How can we give people lawful status when we can't even interview them? And we know that terrorists, according to the 9/11 Commission, were able to get identity documents under false names by gaming the system. So now we're going to have this bureaucracy that can't deal with thousands. And by the way, they're already processing 6 million applications a year altogether. So there's almost no integrity to the process. The GAO said that the fraud rate in the political asylum program, which was specifically identified as a real threat to national security, because when you're dealing with political asylum, generally the aliens involved are coming from countries that aren't friendly to us. They're coming from enemy countries. They're coming from countries that are involved with terrorism. So we can't go to those governments and say, do you know this guy? So we're flying blind. The fraud rate has been 70%, and now the president wants to make it easier to get political asylum. So even if we discover that someone applying for asylum had contact with a terror group, no problem. You can still get political asylum. You know, I'm really fearful, Aileen, that one day we're going to have to move militarily against a country like Iran. I mean, I think the day is on the horizon at some point. And, you know, it might not be under this administration, because considering how Mr. Obama does his job, I don't think he'll do anything with Iran. I think he's just going to issue a speech and then hop on Air Force One and go golfing in Hawaii or something. But at some point, someone's going to pay the piper. And on the day if we do have to move militarily against Iran, my concern is that there's truly a fifth column in place, and a lot of stuff is going to start blowing up inside the United States, and it's going to be on that day that the realization is going to sink in that we admitted the Trojan horse into our country. And, in fact, the leader of the Iranian Guard, which is part of their CUDs, their shock troops, these are the assassins and the saboteurs, has said openly in the media, we have our people in place in the United States. We've picked out our targets. We're just waiting for the right moment to strike. I don't think it was bluff or bluster or a lie. I think he's as serious as a heart attack. And yet, when you try to get people in the news media or you try to get politicians to listen to the dangers posed by open borders, you get rebuffed. You become accused of nativism, racism, or they just won't talk about it. They want it, on some stations, they want to talk about how Obama is exceeding his authority. They'll go that far. But don't you dare even think of talking about the nexus between border security and terrorism and national security. And yet you would think that that conversation is a slam dunk, easy to comprehend. How do you know when a country has been, you know, taken over? When the invaders have come across the border and change the regime and change the money and change the language and, well, wait a moment, what are we witnessing? How crazy is this?
We're witnessing the destruction of America, and it's frightening, and I'm not quite sure how we can continue to try to wake up people when Obama himself is in the White House asleep, you know, when we're having our own military being attacked, and we're not even willing to protect our men.
Well, I'm waiting to see what comes out of this Benghazi report. You know, I think Trey Gowdy is a real tough character. I've had the privilege of speaking with Trey Gowdy, and my personal sense is that he's a no-nonsense guy, and he will dig and dig and dig until he gets to the bottom. And I think the American people are in for a rude awakening. I'm sorry?
I pray that he does. I remember being at the early voting polls in 2012, and we had signs up saying Benghazi with question marks all over it. And the the Americans that weren't awake were going, you shouldn't talk about that. That's a terrible sign to have up there. Here we are a year and a half, and we still haven't brought anybody to justice for the killing of four Americans.
Okay, so you got Benghazi, you got Fast and Furious. How in the world do you justify Fast and Furious? Let me tell you something. You know, I had a desk at ATF for about 4 or 5 years, and I've worked with ATF throughout my whole career. And they're a great bunch of folks to work with. And I could tell you that they must be pulling hair out of their heads. Ironically, when the Mura office building was blown up in Oklahoma, I was on my way into ATF when the bomb went off. When I walked in there, boy, oh boy, I mean, you could just see everybody's rage. And when we took guns off the street, because we were doing arrests together, I was part of the squad. I was part of an FBI squad. I was part of an ATF squad. And I spent for 14 years I had a desk at DEA. I took the scenic tour. But every time we took a gun off the street from some drug dealer or a murderer or some real evil character, there were a lot of chest bumps and hand, you know, a lot of fist bumps and high fives, and we had a little celebration. Because we understood that every time you took a gun off the street, you were saving lives. You were saving people who would have been, if not killed, terribly injured. And to find out that your own agency was complicit in delivering to the cartels thousands of high-powered weapons? Do you know that 100 years from now, someone's going to die because of this? The person that will be killed by some of those guns hasn't been born yet. How hard is it to wrap your brain around that concept?
It's hard to believe that we've let this happen, okay? And that more
under
and
the
more
name
people
of American law enforcement to deliver fully functioning high-powered automatic weapons and turned it over to the most vicious thugs in the world?
It doesn't make any sense to me, and Americans have to wake up and understand they're giving our guns away, but at the same time they want to take our guns from legal citizens here in this country. Doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, it doesn't, and then you look at what they're doing with drugs. Heroin is flowing into this country like water going over a branch. There is no border to speak of. There are heroin epidemics across the country, so that they're giving out antidotes to heroin overdoses to first responders. I can't think of the last time I saw that.
Colorado has approved, you know, drugs, you know, marijuana. And you know, the truth is that issue is going to be coming up here in Florida in the next election. I mean, what don't people understand? The damage that is done through maybe marijuana isn't as severe, but then you go to crack, you go to heroin.
It's a gateway. It's number one. It's a gateway drug. But do you understand what's happening? It's getting to the point that the government is operating more like Tony Soprano than the government. Whether it's the issue of gambling, and I understand that, you know, places that allow gambling, but it's kind of like these government leaders, these officials, simply look at it as a revenue stream. I'm waiting for the day that somebody besides Nevada legalizes prostitution and says, okay, you're now working for the state. You'll be a state hooker as long as we can take your money.
Didn't that happen out in Nevada and...
Well, I'm saying besides Nevada, all it's now, and they will legalize anything that they can at this point, anything that's not nailed down, if it creates a revenue stream. There's nothing about morality. There's nothing about, I mean, look, we could have the debate about whether prostitution should be legal or illegal or whatever, and I understand there's many sides to all these stories. But what bothers me is that the position being taken is purely a matter of doing the math and saying, how do we get money out of it? You look at the lottery, it was originally the numbers racket. And some guy sitting in one of the states said, wow, if we could run our own numbers racket, we could make money. So what did they do? It became the lottery. All it now is a matter of finding ways to reach into people's wallets to take their money so they can continue on. They are in a feeding frenzy over money, and it doesn't matter what damage it does. You know, there was a time that the banks could not get away with the nonsense they get away with now. There was a time that there were laws against usury. There is no such thing anymore. The banks are running freely. They do whatever they want. In fact, there was just a report on about how the banks now are going back to the same kind of crazy lending practices of lending people money that they know they can't repay. And there's going to be another bubble, and it's going to burst again, and more people are going to get hurt, and they're going to expect the government to bail them out. We have never lived in a more corrupt era than we do right now. You have states telling illegal aliens, come on down. We have Mayor de Blasio, God only knows, who is offering to provide identity documents to illegal aliens. So here's my question, and I want everybody out there to put on their little thinking cap, you know, like they used to have on Ding Dong School or whatever it was you watched when we were little kids ourselves. Why do we bother with a lawful process to enter the United States if, as Hillary says, what difference does it make? If you're willing to give a person citizenship who runs the border and evades the inspections process that's supposed to keep out criminals and terrorists and aliens with dangerous diseases or mental illness, then why are we inspecting anybody? Imagine if you were on a highway, and you know, you go through the highway, and they have the express lane for the easy pass, so they tell you to slow down to 55 and keep on going, and if you don't have easy pass, then you go to the right and you pay your toll, and then you get back on the highway. Basically, we have a third lane now, and the third lane says, don't pay and ignore the speedometer. Okay, so let me see if I understand this. I don't have to have an easy pass, so I pay money and I wait on a long line and I fork over the money. Or I get an easy pass and I can zip through at 55. Or don't bother with any of that and just go barreling on through that third lane, and you can go as fast as you want and not be charged. How many people are going to bother with an easy pass or paying if they're told that the third lane they go to has no speed limit and you don't have to pay at all? That's what we're doing with entering the United States. This notion that, well, on the one hand, if you enter the United States legally, there's a process and you wait online and we do it this way, that way, and the other way, or run the border, show up, and we'll give you an application so you can now stay here legally. And by the way, we won't have any way of knowing who you are. So if you're wanted for God knows what crimes in some other country, Don't worry. Run the border. We'll give you a new name. Have I lost my mind, Aileen?
No, you haven't. And I'll tell you what, and I know you have, you read Atlas Shrugged, okay, by Ayn Rand. And that's what's happened. We have reversed the morale. And I'm not talking about sex. I'm talking about the morals, the values, what's right, what's wrong. And we are we are rewarding bad behavior, and we're punishing good people every single day. And we are turning good people into bad people because it's the only way they can survive. And when you get to the point that 47%, were good people, and they're being forced into the 52%. I mean, we're in trouble. We are in trouble in this country. And we have to wake up, see what's happening, and we have to reverse courses. We have to put value and morals back into this country, or we are doomed for failure. Do you agree with me, Michael?
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. And, you know, here's what's so remarkable. We keep on hearing, we got to fix the immigration system. What's broken about the immigration system? You have people who are violating the law. Let's make it real simple, okay? So what's wrong with the system is there's lots of people violating the law with impunity. If I had to sum it up, is that the best way of describing it? So what's the solution to people ignoring the law? You have to deter them. How do you deter them? By giving them rewards for violating the law or giving them punishment for violating the law? If you had a child who wasn't doing homework, do you say to the kid, well, if you don't do your homework, I'm going to go out and buy you a double scoop ice cream cone and I'm going to rent you a movie and buy you an Xbox? Or do you say to the kid, go to your room and I'm taking the TV out of your room because you didn't do your homework? What would a sensible parent do?
Well, we hope they would send them to the room and take their iPhones, iPads, and write it out in longhand.
Okay, but what are we doing? With immigration, we're doing the exact opposite. We're saying to them, oh, you want to run the border? No problem. Now, if you get one opportunity for a first impression, what's the first impression that people get? What's the first contact that foreign nationals get with our country? It's our immigration laws. So from day one, as General Vallely pointed out, what have we convinced people of? That you can come to the United States, violate our laws, violate our borders, and we'll reward you. We'll put you on a path to citizenship. We'll educate you. We'll give you health care. We'll take care of you. Just ignore the border. That's like saying to somebody, it's like saying if I catch you speeding, obviously you need to drive a car that's able to go fast, so we'll give you a Corvette if we catch you speeding. Instead of saying we're going to take away your license, we say, no, we'll give you a Corvette. So then at least when you drive fast, you'll drive safely because the Corvette can handle the speed. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, of course it does. And we've got our president going to let these people out of jail and give them a pass because, my goodness, they got guilty pleas because we shouldn't have been so rough on them. Let's let them all back out at one time. And what is it about?
What could possibly go wrong, Aileen?
Yes, what could go wrong?
What could possibly?
It's frightening. I mean, and people think it's okay.
I just wanted to turn to my audience for a moment. You know, if you're listening to the conversation first that I had with General Vallely and right now with Aileen Milton, who's a leader of a group down in Florida, and I'll be doing a Skype interview with their group come Monday night. I'm very excited about it, by the way. We really have to react to what's going on, folks. Sitting home and saying, boy, this is terrible, it just doesn't quite suffice. You need to start making phone calls. You need to start arranging appointments with your elected representative. You need to get them to hear you and understand that this is not acceptable. Hey, Lynn, I want to go off and talk to my audience about a little bit more, but I want to thank you so much for calling in. I am absolutely looking forward to joining you on that Skype interview on Monday. What time are we doing it again?
We're actually live, and it'll be on thevillagesteaparty.org. The meeting starts at 6:30. We'll probably get you up. We do prayer, pledge, and a song, and we'll probably have you up by about a quarter to seven, and our meeting will go till about 8 o'clock.
Okay, so a quarter to seven, you say, yes?
Yes, about 6:45, we'll start our meeting and do a little bit of our normal meeting procedures, and then we will have you up by about 6:45, introduce you, give you 45 to 50 minutes, and then the last 15 minutes of our program is a Q&A from our audience.
That's awesome. I'm looking forward to it. Please remember to send me the link to it, and I'm looking forward to joining you. And I'll speak to you over the weekend to make the final arrangements so that we have everything all cleared up and we're ready to rock and roll come Monday evening.
Thank you, Michael, and I appreciate everything you're doing, and I hope everybody's listening out there and understands what you're doing. It's a great job, and we appreciate what you're providing us.
Well, thank you so much. You know, ever since 9/11, I've really been a man on a mission.
I understand that. I've been doing this long time too. God bless
you. Yes, and I appreciate all the work you're doing. America depends on its citizens, its activists. We really need to do this. I will speak with you over the weekend, Aileen, and I thank you again for calling in. So
have a
terrific weekend. I'll probably speak with you tomorrow off the air. How's that?
Sounds wonderful.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. All right, folks, that was Aileen Milton. She's an activist. And, you know, really, we depend on our citizen activists, people who get off the couch and get involved. And that's really what it's got to be about. It's about involvement. It's about taking democracy seriously. Because what we're witnessing today is something that we've never seen before. We have never seen a situation before where lawlessness is being rewarded on a wholesale level. It's a very dangerous path. It's the path to anarchy. I mean, I don't want to sound like, you know, black helicopters and, you know, the flying saucers are coming. But the point is that we are a country of law, but you would never know it. When you have our leaders selectively enforcing, picking and choosing the way you would in a restaurant, you know, I'll have some soup, but I don't feel like salad. It doesn't work that way. When I took that oath of office as a federal agent, no one said, will you enforce the laws you like, the laws you think are sort of okay, kind of. No, you sign on for the whole deal. If you can't take that oath in honesty and say, well, I'm going to enforce the laws, I'm going to support and defend the Constitution and the country, then you shouldn't be raising your right hand. You need to find a different job to do. I'm not going to say that every law is a law that I'm thrilled with. I mean, we can have some disagreements about whether laws are good, bad, or ugly. But when you sign on, you take an oath, and that oath means something. That oath certainly means something to soldiers. It certainly meant something to General Vallely when he was in the military, and to this very day, he's still very much the leader that he's always been. I wish that our elected representatives, many of them, that they took their oaths of office as seriously as the men and women in the armed services, as the men and women in law enforcement do. You know, by the way, what I should have done, General was on with me, and I'm remiss, should have given out the website for Stand Up America. So please take out your crayons and write this down. Go to www.standupamericaus.org. That is the website for General Paul Vallely's organization. Stand Up America, one word, StandUpAmericaUS, one word, .org. That's the StandUpAmericaUS.org is General Paul Vallely's organization. He's very much concerned about the future of this country, the future of our children and our grandchildren. I share his concerns. And that's why I was so thrilled and so honored to have him on the program. Great American, great leader, great perspective, great perspective. Just for a couple of minutes, I just wanted to talk a little bit about what I've been doing with CAPS, Californians of Population Stabilization. If you go to their website, capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, They've really been hammering away on the environment, which makes sense because last month we had Earth Day. And it's incongruous to think that open borders are good for the United States or the environment. I'm sure you've seen those images of all the debris, all the garbage, all the filth along the Mexican border. I've been down there. I've walked that border. I've driven along the border. I've walked through fields filled, I can't tell you how high, with plastic bags, syringes for drugs, because some of these guys are injecting themselves to keep them awake so they keep on moving. I mean, really scary stuff. The livestock tends to eat this garbage. They die. It gets stuck in their stomachs. In some cases, it gets into the food chain. I mean, this is really a bad situation. And that's just along the border. We have a public health problem. They were just saying that they've had an outbreak of some respiratory illnesses that are endemic to the Middle East. You know, this whole process of inspecting people, and it's not to demean or whatever, but remember, Ellis Island was a quarantine station. If you eradicate an illness in the country and then people come in who've never been inoculated, it puts everybody at risk. That's what we're witnessing. If you don't stop foreign workers from coming in, half the world lives below the poverty line, and now 1 in 5 Americans live below the poverty line. If you keep dumping workers into the labor pool, you're going to drive down wages. Labor is a commodity. The De Beers company that does diamonds is very careful about how many gem-quality diamonds are put in the market every year, because they know if you flood the market with diamonds, you could drive the price down to where it'll be a little more expensive than cut glass. So what do? They're very careful about how many diamonds are released onto the market every year to keep the price at a level that they're happy with it. The major players want to drive down the wages, whether it's the high-tech workers, people from India. You have Ted Cruz. See the video. This isn't me saying this. Ted Cruz said it. You can see his own mouth flapping. We need 325,000 high-tech workers to come to the United States, H-1B visas. And for the first time, we're going to allow their wives and their children to work in the United States, even if they displace Americans. But who cares? What difference does it make? And then they're going to send money out of the economy, further increasing our deficit. But we're told this is a good thing. When you hear the news and people sit there clucking back and forth, oh, we need comprehensive reform. We should have passed it last year. If we only had passed it, it'd be great for the economy. You never hear anybody questioning them and saying, how is it good for the economy? And then you're told if we bring all these brilliant people into the United States, they're going to create new jobs. Okay, we do have people. Elon Musk, who did an amazing job, was born in South Africa, came to Canada, through Canada, he legally immigrated to the United States. I presume he's got a green card, probably citizenship now. Fine, he's absolutely wonderful. I'm happy he's here. I think he's done a great job. I think he's great for America. And I want to see people like Elon Musk admitted to the United States. So I'm not talking about shutting down the border. That's not what I'm talking about. But do you really believe if Ted Cruz and his disastrous plans for America was allowed to happen, that we bring in every year 325,000 high-tech workers? Do you think that's going to help American programmers and engineers and technicians who can't find work? Because now we're going to bring in all these high-tech people from India who will work for a fraction of the wages that Americans work for? It's folly. It's a lie. It's an absurdity. But you won't hear that on any television station. Period. They won't say it. Everybody tells you we need comprehensive reform, and if only Mr. Boehner would close his mouth, they could get this done. And they talk about congressional gridlock. Oh, my God, they're not letting this thing happen. We need comprehensive reform. So let me ask you folks a question. Would you feel comfortable knowing that we were giving millions of people identity documents where we can't verify the country they're from, let alone what their real name is? When you arrest somebody, and I've arrested thousands of people in my 30-year career, when you ask people what happens during the arrest process, people immediately will tell you, we photograph and fingerprint people, and now in some places they do a DNA swab. Why? Because bad guys use false identities. Bad guys use false identities to conceal themselves the way a chameleon changes color to conceal himself or herself among its intended victims. So we're going to go into the business of giving millions of foreign nationals who snuck into the country to avoid the process that's supposed to keep out criminals and terrorists, kind of like someone breaking into your home, we're going to give them the key to the front door. Insanity. And nobody challenges it. And then you hear this pablum, oh, you're anti-immigrant if you don't want to give illegal aliens who snuck in official identity documents and the authority to work here. Really? Think of how many people, folks, get upset when there's a promotion in a company and they hire someone from the outside. You know, I worked for that company for 15 years and the promotion came up and they brought in Charlie from that other company. Boy, people get angry. Imagine if they brought in somebody from another country. Folks, that's what we're doing. We're doing it because Zuckerberg and Bloomberg and Greenspan and all these other characters and Gates want to do this because they can pay these people a lot less money so they can pocket a lot more money. And we all know that Mr. Bloomberg and Mr. Gates and Mr. Zuckerberg and Mr. Greenspan, they all need money. I mean, they're starving to death. What does Bloomberg have, 19 houses and an airliner? I don't know how he survives under such poverty conditions. This is madness. They are in a feeding frenzy, and we're the ones that are getting hammered into the ground. Alan Greenspan referred to Americans with skills or education as the privileged elite when he did a hearing in 2009 for Chuck Schumer. Chuck Schumer is the guy that's leading the band. He was the gang leader of the Gang of Eight. I call them the Eight Gangsters. And in this mad dash to flood the market with consumers and with cheap labor so they can make more money, we are displacing American workers. CBS today said, wow, they created all these jobs. That's the good news. The bad news? More and more Americans are dropping out of the labor market. They're throwing up their hands and giving up. Why are they giving up? Because it's an exercise in futility to try to find work. This is where we are today. And meanwhile, when you listen to the TV programs or you watch them, you'll hear it from all of them. I can't remember the last program on any network where somebody stood up and said, why in the world would you bring in more workers if we don't have enough jobs to go around? This is a game of musical chairs where they're bringing more kids into the room, but they're not bringing in any more chairs. So many more kids are going to be left standing when the music stops. Many more American workers are being left standing when their music stops. And on top of it, we're allowing criminals and terrorists to enter the United States, and we're going to give them identity documents to conceal who they are. What could possibly go wrong? We've become a nation of gullible cowards. We're afraid to stand up for ourselves. All it takes is somebody pointing a finger and saying, oh, you're a bigot. And most people, instead of saying, what in the world are you talking about? You're a liar, will look at the guy and say, I'm sorry, you misunderstood me. I didn't mean to offend you. Offend him. Get in his face. We're Americans. That's our birthright, to tell people off. There's a wonderful song that's called America, What is America to Me? I always hear Sinatra's voice in my head when I think of that wonderful song. But there's a wonderful line in the song that says that part of what America is the right to speak your mind out. Maybe not so much today. Maybe not so much today. And when you stop speaking your mind out, and when you allow people to intimidate you into keeping your mouth shut, bad things happen. Terrible things happen. When people understand that the people that they want to push around won't resist, they will push them around. You're seeing it in the Ukraine because Putin knows that our president isn't going to react. He'll make a speech. He'll send that genius over there, John Kerry, or he'll send Joe Biden, the court jester Joe Biden. And what are the consequences for Russia? And now they're threatening to not allow our astronauts to get on board the Soyuz. And who could blame them? What's Obama going to do? Grab a golf club and head to Hawaii? The idea that they have come to learn in Russia is that they can do what they want. Obama will make a speech and go to Hawaii and play golf. That's the consequence. So they've got free rein. They can do whatever they want. America's esteem in the world has never been lower. And I'm going to ask each of you, if you're listening to my voice, if you're out there, what have you done about it? Who knows what you really think or really feel? Have you reached out to your elected member of Congress? Have you spoken to your senator or his or her staff? Have you made your concerns known? There's a primary coming up in most states very soon. Primary for the Congress. Every seat in the House of Representatives is up for grabs. I don't have the exact number, but roughly a third of the Senate seats up for grabs. This primary is important. If you have a member of Congress who voted for comprehensive reform, or if you have it's the Senate that voted for it. If you have a senator in your state who voted for comprehensive reform, I don't care what that senator says. I don't care what the issues are. If they voted for S-744, they need to go. You can find it very easily by going online. Because S-744 was a program to triple the number of high-tech workers. It was a program to give illegal aliens identity documents. It's an anti-American worker program. If you have members of the House of Representatives talking about the need for comprehensive reform, you need to get rid of them. If they talk about we're going to secure the Mexican border first, you need to get rid of them. There's something known as the Calais deception. I probably should have asked General Vallely about it to explain it to you, so I'll do it. For those of you not familiar with the Calais deception, also known as Operation Fortitude, during the Second World War, when General Eisenhower and the other leaders of the Allies knew that they needed to attack Germany, they wanted to go in through Normandy. That became D-Day. We've all heard of it, June 6, 1944. But the understanding was that if all of the Germans were massed along the beach at Normandy, our guys would have been killed and they wouldn't have made it. The trick was to get the Germans to split their defenses so that they could get in. And what they did was to create a phantom army, convincing the Germans that we might well be coming in through Calais. And, of course, that great general, George S. Patton, was put in charge of a phantom army. When I say phantom army, folks, I mean phantom army. They had inflatable tanks and inflatable trucks. You can see little video clips of it on the Internet. Go look it up. The Calais deception, C-A-L-A-I-S. I'll spell it for you again. C-A-L-A-I-S, Calais. Go look. You'll see it. You'll see the videos. These were vehicles that could be moved around by one soldier. They were basically floats. They were blimps. They, you know, if you put enough hydrogen in, maybe they would, or enough helium, and they'd probably float like the Thanksgiving Day parade. They were balloons. And they put them there on the beach at night. The soldiers created what looked like tracks, because under the cover of darkness, they didn't have night vision during the Second World War. So when the Luftwaffe reconnaissance planes flew overhead during the day, what did they see? Tanks and trucks, and they figured it was really an invasion force waiting to go. The Germans had to split their defenses, and they weren't able to hold back the Allied forces. And that's how we succeeded on June 6th. I don't even know how many Americans died, but my goodness gracious, it was a bloodbath. And I have to ask the obvious question, what in the world did they die for? We're giving away our country today to the highest bidder. To the highest bidder. So the point that I'm making to all of you is understand that this Mexican border business is today's Calais deception. That's not to say that we must not secure that border. Of course we must. Absolutely we must, okay? But it's not the be-all and end-all. We have 50 border states. So when you have a senator or a member of Congress who says, we're going to secure that Mexican border, run for your life. That's a person who's trying to deceive you. The immigration system is broken. There is nothing about that system that has a shred of integrity. And those laws are designed to protect us from people who are dangerous or people who would take jobs. How in the world can anybody say that those laws aren't important? You know, they do polls and surveys, and I think General Vallely had gotten into that idea. And if you ask the average American what's important, well, poverty and homelessness, the deficit, the threat of violence and crime, the threat of terrorism, all important. And they are. But you know what's at the root cause of all of that? This failure to secure America's borders and this failure to enforce enforce the laws and secure the borders. And people don't get it. So when they say, how important is immigration? They say, oh, maybe a little bit. No, it's vital. It's essential. It's essential. If you were on the Titanic, how big a deal is an iceberg, right? Well, if you were on the Titanic, an iceberg was a big deal because it was an iceberg that resulted in the destruction of the Titanic. A big chunk of ice, not a big deal? Really? Maybe it was a big deal. That chunk of ice, that iceberg for us, is the failure to secure the borders, the failure to enforce the immigration laws, which, by the way, have nothing to do with race, everything to do with national security, public safety, the well-being of America and Americans. That's the message that you need to understand. You're looking at what's playing out with Benghazi. And when people say to you, you're one person, what could you do? I know Vallalee was a general, but they've been pushing and pushing and pushing, and finally, they are going to convene a select committee to go after Benghazi. Finally. We can succeed. It's not going to be easy, but it's certainly worthwhile. If we can't do this, we can kiss this country goodbye. And that's not a statement of xenophobia. Because the criminals that I arrested as an agent, ladies and gentlemen, didn't come from one country or one continent. I've arrested criminals from Asia. I've arrested criminals from Europe, criminals from Africa, criminals from Latin America, criminals from Canada. They were every color of the rainbow. It's not about race, religion, origins. It's simply about people who should not be in our country because they're foreign nationals and they aren't doing what they need to do. They pose a threat to our safety and well-being one way or the other. It's kind of like telling somebody that they're antisocial if they lock their door at night after they've heard that there were people trying to pull off burglaries and home invasions. What sane person wouldn't lock their door at night? We know terrorists want to get in and attack us, and we're inviting them in. And nobody's being made accountable. And members of Congress will give you these dumbass arguments. Well, we can't deport them all. Okay. And we can't stop every speeder either. So do we take down the speed limit signs on the highway? It's about as dope blame the Congress nearly as much as I blame our fellow Americans who refuse to become educated, who refuse to get involved, who are sitting on their couch playing Xbox, watching Dancing with the Stars, and ignoring the threats that our country and our citizens face today. If you go to the CAPS website, I think you'll find some really great articles. I'm not the only one who writes for them. There's a whole bunch of folks who write for them, so check out their website. They made an interesting point about the non-involvement of so many American workers today. Almost 100 million American workers have given up being part of the labor force. That's a huge number. And that really tells the story. That's why when you drive around America, when you look at places like Detroit, and you see once beautiful cities reduced to rubble, ghost towns, it's awful. It's awful. And that's why I write for them, and that's why I have my own website, and that's why I do my program. Having lived through 9/11, my goal is to provide you with the information that, frankly, you're not going to hear anywhere else. So we take on the tough issues, and we tell the truth. And I try to bring you guests who I hope you will find interesting and exciting, guests who will provide you with a perspective that you're not going to hear anywhere else. General Vallalee was my guest this evening. He had been a Fox News analyst. He was a two-star general in the United States Army, truly an authority figure. His perspectives on Egypt, his perspectives on the Benghazi situation, as that MasterCard commercial would say, are priceless. I want to thank all of you for spending Friday evening with me, Friday afternoon, depending on whether you're here, there, or everywhere on the West Coast, perhaps my good friends out there in California, my friends from CAPS over in Santa Barbara, beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, great place to visit, and every place in between. I know I had a couple of other phone calls. If you called in, I didn't get to you, forgive me, but I just thought that it was important that we devoted as much time as possible with General Vallalee. I know his time is tight. I know he had a whole bunch of other radio programs that he was on earlier today, and I believe he had some more interviews to do this evening. I was thrilled that he was able to take some time out and visit with us this evening, May 2nd, 2014. I want to thank you again for listening. If you become aware, by the way, folks, of opportunities for me to do speaking engagements or debates on college campuses or other such venues, let me know. I'm going to be doing a couple of such events this coming week out here on Long Island, or as we jokingly say, Long Island, being a New Yorker. But I've certainly been all over the country. I'd be happy to come to your neck of the woods. You can reach me at michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org. I also have a couple of articles you might want to read up on American Outrage US, or .us, I guess it is. But again, it's about getting the message out there and providing the information that all Americans desperately need. But take that information, folks, and do something worthwhile with it. Call a congressman. He or she is probably lonely and would love to hear from you. Democracy is not a spectator sport, folks. Please get involved, get your voice heard, and do it before the primaries. And don't forget to vote. We need you to vote. Vote out the bums who would give us comprehensive reform. Thank you. See you next week.